So you have these things that we've already done. And we've also talked about, say, the average of something like x squared plus y squared, which that famous concept would be the radius of the gyration squared, but I won't make you memorize that terminology. One thing I did want to explicitly cover, there's a lot of stuff in section 5.6 on length lines. I won't get into all of it. But one thing I want to cover is this thing, the moment of inertia, which is the rotational analog of mass. It measures how hard it is to spin something. More precisely, how hard is it to speed up or slow down its spinning around a given axis. So it depends on which line you're talking about spinning it around. And some things are easy. Some lines are easy to find. So, for example, distance to z-axis. We've thought about this before, right? We have a symbol for the distance to the z-axis, the r, right? From cylindrical coordinates. And if you square that, the Pythagorean theorem, you have the x squared plus y squared. And if you were doing some other axis, say distance to the x-axis, it's completely analogous. We don't have a special symbol for it, but you can guess what it should be, right? You could prove that using the 3D version of the Pythagorean theorem, right? The distance, to there should be found by, okay, if I'm at, say, 3, 4, 5, and I want to get to the x-axis, right, what do I need to do? Well, don't change the x-coordinate. To get to the x-axis, just make the 4 and 5, the y and z, go to 0. And so you go from 3, 4, 5 to 3, 0, 0. And so the distance will be the square root of 4 squared plus 5 squared. So I guess it looks something like this.
And this is the x-axis.
Yeah. The x-axis is the line in 3D space where y and z are 0. Just like in 2D space, the x-axis is the line where y is 0. It's the same reasoning you have for cylindrical coordinates and this formula, except with the x-axis instead of the z-axis. And similarly, if you wanted distance to the y-axis, it would be the same scenario. And the key there, in terms of generalizing it to an arbitrary line, is that you approach the axis at a right angle. That's the shortest way to get there, so that's the distance. And way back in chapter 2, we talked about the general setup, right? How do you find the distance from a point to an arbitrary line? Okay. So, how about we parameterize a line, all right? So t can be any real number, that's the parameter. And you plug it into three formulas for x, y, and z to get positions on the line that depend on t. Let's say we have a parametric definition of our line. Okay. So give me some formulas. Like, how should we parameterize x? Remember this stuff from chapter 2? What kind of formulas do you use for parameterizing a line? T? Yeah. It should be something linear, right? Like AT plus B, but not T squared or something. So
we can use T.
How about for Y? Look, give me something.
Three.
Okay, so Y is always 3. And how about something for Z? I don't know. 5 minus 2T. Okay. Now, could we get then the distance formula? Let's say I have an arbitrary point ABC. I like to use XYZ when I'm talking about points on the line, so that's why I'm going to use ABC here instead of XYZ. So we have our line. Some lines are straighter than others, I guess. But anyways, we know we want to find the distance if we approach the line perpendicularly. And what am I calling the distance? I'm calling it R today because, well, capital R, because that's the symbol they use in physics when they talk about this stuff. R for distance to the axis that you're considering for rotation. We want to measure the rotational mass. So, let's see. How do we get this? We use vectors and so on, right? What kind of vectors would be relevant here? When I see this equation, I get one vector from it that tells me a lot about the line. Yes?
1, 0, negative 2.
Okay. And what does that vector have to do with the line? Does it point to a point on the line? Is it perpendicular to the line? Is it parallel to the line?
Of the parallel line to the L.
It's parallel to L.
It's a vector that is parallel to the line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at the... So remember there's vector R, which is just your position vector, arrow from origin to XYZ, right? And then there's velocity vector, right? The time derivative of position. So if you imagine that t is time, you're moving along the line, the velocity vector is parallel to the line. And you can take the derivatives, or you can just read off the relevant coefficients. As Edward said, 1, 0, negative 2. That's not a unit vector, but I don't care. I just need some arrow parallel to the line. So that could look more parallel, couldn't it? Okay, so
these little parallel symbols, right? Okay, so we have found a vector parallel to L.
Are you guesstimating the direction? Just ask me.
I didn't draw any coordinate axes. This is just an abstract picture, all right?
I mean, here I've got the positive x-axis going that way, so I should have v going more that way, right?
Yeah. Just imagine that the x, y, and z axes are pointing in the appropriate direction to make my diagram true. There's some way you could rotate them to make this accurate. All right. So, fine. And what else do I need? Knowing an arrow parallels the line is not enough, because I can imagine the marker's going through the line, but there's all these other parallel lines, right? Like a line here, they're all pointing the same way. Which line is this one? I need more information.
You need the distance from...
Well, I want to get the distance, but to get that...
I need to know
another point, yes.
0.35.
That's a point. And so 0.35 is a point, not an arrow. And 0.35 is where?
It's on the line.
It's on the line. Right.
On three.
Yeah, plug in t equals 0 just because that's the easiest number to plug in. You could plug in t equals 28, I don't care, but you need a point on the line, right? So, here we go. Let's pretend it's here. Okay. When you take the derivative, you throw away some information, right? Because it kills all the constants. You need to keep some of that information somehow. Just plug in a particular t value so you get at least one point on the line. Okay? So now we can make an arrow, right? And this away. And let's call that arrow u. So the arrow from 0.35 to ABC, and what would that arrow's components be? A, and then what's the next component of this arrow?
B minus 3.
Yes, we're going from y equals 3 to y equals b, and then we're going from z equals 5 to z equals c.
Okay.
Now, there's an angle, maybe I'll call it alpha. And so we have a right triangle here. The hypotenuse is the magnitude of u. This leg over here is the distance we want. And alpha is the angle opposite that leg.
So we've reduced it to a trig problem.
Find the sine of alpha. Very good. And how do we do that? We've got all these 3D vectors running around. There's a formula. Yeah. What's the sine of an angle? How can I get the sine of the angle between two 3D vectors?
Yeah.
Let's see that. Here's u, here's v, here's the angle alpha between them.
Can you get the dot product?
No, that'll give you something related to the cosine.
Yeah.
Other product, yeah, the
cross
product, yeah. More precisely, we would get the magnitude of the cross product. And it's related to the magnitude of the vectors as well. But you can just divide both sides by, say, that magnitude of B there. So you might have memorized a formula like that for distance to the lines when you were studying for the test. I guess it would be test 2 did those, or potentially did those. I think I did, maybe I did distance to the plane instead, but anyways. Regardless, if you think about the geometry, you can recover the formula that you may or may not remember. All right. Okay, cross product. Yeah. Let's see here. Okay, so how's that go? I have my little cycle in my mind of 1, 2, 3. For the first component, I want to get to 1. So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1. So start at 2, 3, 1. So 2 times 3 minus 3, 2. Switch them around. You can have your calculator do the cross product if my 1, 2, 3 nonsense doesn't help you. There's also the determinant formula if you like that.
1 minus B minus
B. Let's see, we got 3, 1, 2. Right? 3, no, 3, 1.
Oh,
minus 1, 3.
Yeah, and then 1, 2.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, so... One, am I getting them backwards?
Probably. Yeah, I think the middle goes up at the right.
Okay.
It's 23,
32, 13, 31. Yeah, okay. Okay, let me try that again. Okay, 2, 3, there we go. I probably was going to have a factor of minus 1 in the whole thing that was wrong. But, okay, 2, 3, 3, 2. Three, three, two.
13, 31.
31. When I think of it as 31, that just throws me.
Oh, okay.
I can't do that.
Okay.
All right, that's fine. All right, so 3, 1, minus 1, 3, right? And then finally... 1, 2, minus 2, 1. Again, my calculator has this cross P command, so you can also look in your menu under vector or something and find the cross product command. So this can all be automated to some degree. Okay. Well, so I guess we can put all of this together, right? Since we've got the board space up here. Alright, so you'd have a bunch of stuff there. Now, I don't really want R so much as I want R squared, right? For the moment of inertia. So that's good news, because I won't have to deal with all the square roots you normally have in the magnitudes. All right. So the magnitude of V will just be, you have 1 squared and 2 squared. So, okay, so magnitude of V squared, that'll just be a fifth. Well, it's reciprocal. Squared magnitude will be a fifth. And then the interesting one is over here. Okay. So I guess 4 times b minus 3 squared for the x component squared. Then you have the y component squared. So c minus 5 plus 2a. So 2a plus c minus 5b squared. Room. And then the z component squared will be b minus 3 squared. ABC to L, we get a formula. I would like to have that in terms of X, Y, Z. Instead of ABC, because when I do the integrals, I like to use X, Y, Z instead of ABC. So just change the letters, and this will look more like those formulas over there. Okay. So often, you take physics, they probably, say University Physics 1 will teach you about the moment of inertia, but for, say, slanted lines, probably skip over that because there's some significant geometry and computation here to just get the distance formula for an arbitrary line in 3D space. But we have the tools, and I thought there was room in the schedule. I wanted to show you one of these. So once you have the formula, then you can plug it into an integral like this. So you can figure out, okay, for different axes, what is the rotational mass? If you like the physics, it has to do with Newton's second law. Force equals mass times acceleration. The rotational version is torque equals moment of inertia times angular acceleration. So that's why it's called rotational mass by a lot of people, because it's the analog of mass in that equation. How hard is it to change the rotational speed? I think I will just photograph and erase the lower board because that way I'll be able to move it later. Okay. So,
Any questions about the geometry part of it?
Yeah. Okay. That was a fair amount of geometry, so I'll try to make the region of integration not involve too much geometry. Because that would make, you know, even more work. Right? Okay. Let's have a not too difficult region. Say H be the hemisphere about the northern hemisphere, say, right? Really the interior one. So let's say that the radius of the sphere is, I don't know, 2, and Z is non-negative, right? So we get the top half. So half of a ball of radius 2. The ball is centered about the origin. The top of this hemisphere would be at 0, 0, 2. Okay. And let the density... let's say that the density is proportional to Z, so I'll just make the constant proportionality 1. Okay. So we could do some things with this, right? We could find the moment of inertia of H, say, with respect to, you know, an easy line first, right, if we wanted. Yeah. Say, with respect to the z-axis, right? So this would be an integral over region H of, we want distance squared to the z-axis times the little mass differential. Each tiny chunk, you measure its mass, you multiply by that squared distance to the z-axis for that chunk. Okay, now mass is density times volume. And the distance to the z-axis is x squared plus y squared, and I said that density was z simply, so this would be that. So for each little chunk, you measure its volume, multiply by z, multiply by x squared plus y squared, add up all of those products. Okay. Take the limit of smaller and smaller chunks, get the exact value. Okay. Now, what kind of chunks should we use, right? Which coordinate system would be the right thing for this?
Spherical.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to put everything in spherical coordinates. All right. Okay, so this is r squared, which is rho times the sine of phi. Okay. Z is rho times the cosine of phi. The dv would be rho squared sine phi d rho d phi d theta. Okay. we need to figure out how we're going to cut this thing up, right? What are the limits of integration in spherical coordinates? Okay, so the radius can go from what to what? The rho, 0 to 2, right?
Okay.
And your co-latitude, right? The angle you make with the North Pole, right?
That's phi.
Yeah.
All right, so it can go from 0 to what? 90 degrees, right? From 0 at the North Pole, turn 90 degrees to hit the equator, right? Okay, so from 0 to what in radians?
Half a pi.
Half a pi, yeah. That's 90 degrees. And what about theta, the longitude, right? Yeah, remember theta is that angle you make when you're kind of rotating around the z-axis, turning from the x-axis towards the y-axis. Yeah, we have a whole interval of 360 degrees, so pick any interval of length 2 pi. You could pick negative pi to pi, whatever, as long as it has length 2 pi. So we all go all the way around. Okay. So there's our integral. And then we have to throw in all this stuff, right? I'm going to have to move this stuff over. More like this, right? Okay. So we have r squared. So that's the rho sine phi squared. Then we have rho cosine phi from the z. Then we have rho squared sine phi from the volume differential. So I think I caught everything in there. So we're adding up all of this stuff multiplied together. Okay, so this, in terms of spherical coordinates, this is, believe it or not, a rectangle, right? A spherical rectangle, right? Because all the limits are constants. So you could actually factor this out. It's a spherical box, right? In this coordinate system, it's a box. So you can, and you can actually factor everything out here. So you can actually do this as three single integrals. I mean, how many powers of rho do I have? 5, right? So this integral is not as bad as it looks at first sight. Power rule, plug in 2 and 0. This one makes sine of theta your u, and then sine of phi, and then cosine phi d phi will be your du. And so you'll end up with u to the 4th over 4, which will be sine to the 4th over 4. And you'll plug in at pi over 2 and at 0, and you'll get just 1 when you plug in 90 degrees and 0 when you plug in 0. So 1/4. And then this one, right, this is just theta at 2 pi and at 0. It's just the 2 pi because we went around a full revolution in longitude. So you can actually do this one by hand. It's really not that bad. And you can also do it on the calculator if you think it is that bad. Your choice. Okay, so 2 pi, a 4th, pi over 2, pi over 12. So I think we're looking at 64 pi over 12 altogether. You can maybe bring that down a tad. 16 pi. over 3. So that's the rotational mass with respect to the z-axis. So if you look in a physics textbook, you may find somewhere a table of a bunch of moments of inertia, including, say, for a solid ball of uniform density, right? And they usually pick standard axes, like, say, the z-axis, right? And you have to do some computation kind of like this, but even simpler to get the formulas. You'll get something like, I think for a solid ball of density 1, its moment of inertia is something like 2/5 times its mass times the radius squared, the radius of the ball. And the formula of 2/5 just comes from doing an integral like this, but with an r here for the radius instead of just a 2. And then also you divide out the total mass of the thing. And then that's how you get the physics formula. What about this one? What if we wanted the moment of inertia for L? Now that would be an unpleasant integral. Okay? We would have to use this thing, right? Okay? So, the difference here between the integrals would be this. This was our r squared here. And this whole thing here was the dm, right? The density z times the volume differential. So all that's going to change is my r squared formula. Mm-hmm. So it would be this beast, right? It doesn't have to go through the sphere, right? I mean, you could imagine how hard is it to rotate my hand around the line through this marker here, right? You can imagine there's a very thin rod of mass close to zero connecting my fist to this marker, right? And yeah. How hard would it be to rotate around?
The line is, we're talking about that sphere rotating about it.
Yeah. Yeah, how difficult is it to change the rate of rotation of the sphere around that line? Whether the line passes through the sphere or not. It's definitely not an axis of symmetry of the sphere. Which means... I should be careful. Of the sphere, and that's a hemisphere. There is something called the parallel axis theorem, which if you have an axis of symmetry, like, say, the z-axis, then you can use that as a shortcut to figure out the moment of inertia for another line parallel to the z-axis. But since we're doing this slanted line of ours, L, and that slanted line is not an axis of symmetry of our hemisphere as opposed to sphere, even if we had that go through the origin, we can't use the parallel axis theorem here. So, and if you don't know what that is, don't worry. The point is there isn't a shortcut here. You would really do the integral. That would be the r squared. And then we have to multiply by the mass differential, right? The mass of a tiny chunk of this hemisphere, given that density I made up, density Z. Okay, so it's still a box. That's nice. But it's not as easy to factor, right? So you can factor out a row. You see, you're going to have a row. No, you're not going to have that because, say, you'll have a 3 squared term here yet. So you can't factor out a function of just row. Like, we factored out a row to the fifth, and then the... I guess the point is we can't factor into single variable functions. So even though it is a box, you can't factor it like this because the function itself doesn't factor into separate variables. So you have to actually do iterated integrals, right? You first, in this case, first we could integrate with respect to theta if we want, then integrate with respect to phi, then integrate with respect to rho. Preferably on our calculator, right? Okay. But we have the formula. If you wanted to make things easier on your calculator to type all this craziness, you could store variable symbols, right? You could store, that say, if you want, you could store x is rho times the sine of phi times the cosine of theta. You could store that as x. You might want to delete that later when you don't want x to be that, but you could store it as x. And then you could store rho times the sine of phi times the theta as y, right? And then you could store rho times the cosine of phi as z.
Phi was sine variable to all the letters?
Yeah, yeah. So we could assign formulas to x, y, and z, and then we could use this formula. And we could even assign this whole formula to, say, an R2 or something for R squared, right? Whatever we want to call it. And so then we could actually have a somewhat short formula, right, to put into our calculator. Instead of having to literally type all of this verbatim. So you could do some multi-step things like that to make this less painful to type into your calculator. Point is, if you know how to get the region of integration, if you know how to get the distance to the line, if you remember all of the formula conversions for spherical coordinates, what are x, y, and z, what's the volume differential factor, that rho squared sine v, then you can put it all together. And it's a tedious integral, but that should be automated. I think if I put something like this on a test, I have to save it for the final exam because this is such a long problem, right? But what I'd be interested in is, could you set up the integral? That would be most of it. And then maybe can you go a little bit further and have your calculator figure it out, right? Yeah. The hard part was the geometry, right? It is what it is. I wanted you to see the process of how you could get to something you could put in your calculator. And you want to come to my office, we can get out our calculators and we can figure out exactly what this is. Right? Thank you.
So this would be a cone, kind of like this. It makes a 22.5 degree angle with its axis of symmetry.
And it has a height of 8, or sorry, height of 5, right?
So find it for the three coordinate axes, and then find it for a slanted line L, where
what do you think? For this one, would you want to use spherical coordinates for the integral? What do you think?
No.
No? What would you use? Cylindrical. Yes. Because the spherical's okay. Well, let's think. Yeah. Maybe. Let me think about that. Let's see. The cylindrical is really nice for the top. I'm just starting to wonder. I'm wondering about the slanted cone, the slanted face of the cone. What's the formula for that going to be? Let's see. Yes, that one would still be good at cylindrical. Because, yeah, it'll be z equals something times r. Yeah. So, yes, cylindrical is the easier way to go here.
Just for quick reference, for polar, like what would be a good way to use polar coordinates?
Well, I mean, cylindrical is polar with a z, right? So, I mean, think about it.
Whenever you have, in 2D, it's just distance to the origin is r. Here, r is distance to the z-axis, which goes right through the middle of this cone, right? So, r is useful here. If the cone had been given, say, a spherical cap, then we'd want spherical coordinates, right? So use cylindrical and turn the boundary phi equals pi over 8 into a cylindrical coordinate formula, right? All right. I think we're about out of time. Yes, it is now 12:20.